Hello and welcome to Profiles. I'm Adam Ragusea. I am privileged to be in the WFIU studios this morning with the string quartet in residence for the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music's 2006-2007 season. This quartet is also in residence at the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center and at the Manus College of Music in New York City. Its members serve on the faculties of Manus, the Curtis Institute of Music, the Juilliard School, and Queens College. They all have formidable resumes as solo players outside of the quartet, and collectively they are particularly known for their superlative interpretations of the Beethoven quartets, as well as their ongoing commitment to new music. I'm delighted to welcome the Orion String Quartet, violinist brothers Daniel and Todd Phillips, violist Stephen Tenenbaum, and cellist Timothy Eddy here to WFIU and Profiles. Thank you so much for joining us, gentlemen.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So we'll talk about music in a second, but first let's talk about something really important, and that is food. I know that you gentlemen are on the road a lot, and I know that you maintain something of a dining guide.
On our website.
Yeah.
Yeah, which unfortunately is a little out of date at this point, but it was a really fun project to start with. And it just came up, you know, where do people eat, you know, especially after concerts or near the venues where you play, because you don't often have a lot of time to explore the cities that you're in. And we just thought it'd be kind of a useful and somewhat humorous addition to our website, just to have a little reference guide, as it were, to places where we play.
I noticed there are no entries for our fair city here of Bloomington. But we do have a pretty vibrant restaurant culture. Have you guys been able to eat out at all here?
You bet. It's wonderful.
That's well, yeah, that's what I mean. It's out of date.
since we started
coming here regularly a few years ago.
So let's talk about you being here. You are the quartet in residence for the Jacobs School for this year. And that translates to four visits, I believe. And this is – you're here now on the third of those four visits for the year. Tell us about what you're doing here.
We've been visiting the campus for several years now, and our participation in the life of the school has changed somewhat this year as a residency was designed. And we started our first time we came here, we presented the Beethoven String Quartets, the complete cycle, in those, what was it?
It was 2003, right?
Yeah, three residencies, and we did two concerts each time. Now, this time we're visiting the campus, as you said, four times, and we're playing only one concert each visit this time, but we're involved in more activities within the department, along with the masterclass teaching that we do. And we've been inviting guests from the IU Music School faculty to join us, and that's been a wonderful project as well.
What's it like dealing with students here at the Jacobs School as opposed to students where everybody teaches back in New York and Philadelphia? Is there a difference?
Well, I think we find the level of student here very high. It's always had a reputation for being one of the great conservatories in this country, and it still is that way. So we have some wonderful students there, and the kind of things we deal with them on are very sophisticated musical points, really not rudiments at all.
Well, let's talk about Beethoven. As we said that over the course of the winter of 2003-2004, you gentlemen came and played a complete Beethoven cycle here. And the first time you played a complete Beethoven cycle was in 2000, correct?
Yes, right. In New York City.
Right.
Yeah.
So that has got to be an incredible experience, playing in sequence these quartets that span a career. And in a little bit later, we're going to hear you perform the first movement of the first Razumovsky, the first of the middle quartets. What's it like having just played all of the Opus 18 quartets, and then you're about to launch into that iconic beginning of the seventh quartet? And 6 years have passed in Beethoven's life. I don't know how long has passed in terms of you having played the 18 quartets and then moving on to the Opus 59. But what is that transition like? What do you feel like Beethoven has learned over that time?
Well, the middle quartets, like other things in his middle period, like starting with the Eroica Symphony, for instance, his whole idea becomes much more gigantic and expanded than anything that had ever been done before. I think previously the longest classical piece in chamber music was Mozart's C major viola quintet, which is first movement, which is also quite extended. But there's something sort of it's more ambitious and keeping with Beethoven's crazy ideals of trying to somehow capture cosmic values in music rather than just being entertaining and exciting and or even touching. So this is his one of his earlier successful attempts at doing that.
Well, in a way, the form and the style of his middle quartets and, of course, then the late quartets change, you know, quite a bit. You know, first this incredibly expansive and you can feel he's in the prime of his compositional life, and he has tremendous energy and stamina in a way. But, you know, when you play the early quartets, you find a lot of the same feelings and characters, but they're sort of contained in a more earlier classical form. So in a funny way, when you get to the middle quartets, you feel almost liberated in a way because the early ones feel like they want to do that, but they're not allowed to. And so finally now, okay, I can really do this now. it's an interesting experience.
And like also the early quartets are more molded and influenced by his predecessors.
Yes.
Mozart and Haydn.
And Haydn especially.
And then the middle quartets is where he really kind of comes into finding his own titanic voice as well. And we've seen that with other composers too, like Leon Kirchner, whose first quartet was dubbed the Seventh Bartok Quartet. And then the transition from the first quartet to the second quartet, which was not so much that he found his voice, but he really did, it became more of what we know as the later works of Leon Kirchner too.
And we're going to hear some of that first Kirchner Quartet in a little bit here from you gentlemen. Let me ask you, Tim, as a cellist, the first Razumovsky gives you the opportunity, the rare opportunity in the common practice literature where you get to expose the tune before anybody else gets their hands on it in the outer movements and also arguably in the second movement where that's that rhythmic motif. The very beginning of that first movement is so thrilling, how that lovely pastoral tune just kind of bubbles underneath those pulsing strings. What's going through your mind when you're playing that?
Panic.
Well, it's one of the great experiences, one of the many great experiences in these quartets and in these Beethoven quartets. And as you said, it's a remarkable pastoral tune and gigantic and expansive and ambitious in that way. You know, reaching for an experience that is tremendously open and both beautifully, warmly expressive and also with this kind of reaching beyond cosmic kind of feeling already at the beginning of that piece. It's launching something that's tremendous.
So you gentlemen have just completed recording the middle quartets, correct, for a new release?
Yes, they should be released
any second now.
Yeah. any minute now. Yeah. So they should be available on Koch. And so next to come out will be the lates, which we've completed recording, but they need to be they still have to be made into
so
CDs.
So why start with the middle? Why not start at the beginning?
It was suggested by the recording company.
I think those are the most marketable of all the three, as an introduction.
Yeah.
Historically speaking.
Yeah. For us, it really didn't matter because we're doing them all anyway, you know.
Let's talk about the third movement of that quartet, which is my personal favorite. It's just so devastatingly sad in its own way. Yeah. And of course, it carries that famous – a sketch of it carries that famous – indication by Beethoven that said a willow or acacia over my brother's grave. And I have seen recordings of that movement ranging in time from 9 to 14 minutes. What's your approach to tempo with something that
I think we're
slow?
About 20 minutes.
Depends if I get the tempo of the opening right. Because it's so sad, it's tempting to like just completely stay still and wallow in every moment too, but it is almost unrelentingly moving. it begins actually rather with Held, which is so the trick to playing music like that is that it's expressive without being warm and lovely. So it's a kind of not a pretty expression, but it's actually more touching than if it was. Mm. The marking is, I think, lento mesto. As far as mesto, it doesn't it's an Italian word, but which without a good translation, but it's some kind of deep sadness beyond tears. Like you're so sad, you've cried, and you still don't feel any better, and that's mesto. So it kind of goes on from there.
With no sentimentality or anything like that. Yeah. It's incredibly pure in a way. You know, it doesn't drip with any kinds of emotion. It's just simply there, and it's so striking, you know, how directly it gets to your insides just immediately.
Yeah, as with all of Beethoven and other the greatest composers, what's there is greater than it can actually be played. And you just sort of try your best to try to get as much into it as you can. So as a result, for when we rehearse any Beethoven quartet, if we're not careful with the time, we'll just rehearse it for the entire 3 or 4 hour period. If we don't say, oh, guys, let's stop. Even if it's something we've been working on for a decade or two, it just seems to be an endless challenge that Beethoven's holding up over us.
The question you bring up about tempo and pacing is something that's you know, it's always an issue. But it's interesting the range of timings you've encountered with this piece. But you were asking, you know, what was our approach? How did we come up with this? Well, tempo is one of those tools that we have as musicians trying to hit the nail on the head for the character that we want, the character of the experience. And so there's some kind of zone in there. There's some kind of pacing that will capture the ongoing spacious aspect of this music, like I mentioned about the first movement. And there is that in this also. But there's also a tremendous amount of exquisite detail. But finding a good tempo often has to do, a successful tempo often has to do with getting the levels of the experience to all be there and to all be complementing each other instead of, for instance, if one goes a little too slowly, then the detail sounds like the only focus, you know, or the main focus. But if we find that, you know, when we move things a little bit more or play in larger rhythmic groups, then the detail that is embellishment sounds like embellishment and elaboration in the way that it should. So it's an interesting question always.
You're listening to Profiles here on WFIU. We're with the Orion Quartet, the quartet in residence at the IU Jacobs School of Music for the 2006-2007 season. I like to put our audience in the mindset of these marathon Beethoven concerts that you gentlemen have given. How do you segment them?
Well, each concert we do, partly to make good programs and partly in case people don't go to the whole set, but we don't do them all in order.
Oh.
We always put – it kind of works well to do the cycle in six concerts. And therefore, we can start each one with an Opus 18. So each one starts with his early life, and then we have a mixture of middle and late for the rest of them. So it just because the Opus 18s are a little bit like each other in certain ways, and as are the 59s. I once went to a concert where a quartet did all the three 59s in a row, and they're three like gigantic masterpieces, and they rather canceled them each other out because they were next to each other. So that's one way we sort of are actually able to pace ourselves better through it.
So in a way, the whole cycle, of course, is the complete experience of all the quartets, but each concert is also sort of a mini version of this sort of complete feeling of the span of his quartets.
So let's say that you're in a concert and you're about to play the Opus 59 number 1. You've probably played in Opus 18 prior to that. You have to be a little bit fatigued at that point. How do you bring the kind of energy that's necessary for that expansive, symphonic, incredibly energetic first movement?
Now you know the problem of it. We play a Beethoven, all Beethoven concert, and anything besides that seems easy. You know, just the idea of this, it takes the most focus, the most concentration, the most energy of any composer. It takes more out of your brain cells than anything else we've experienced ever. So when we only play one Beethoven quartet on a program and then we play
– it was already bad.
Schoenberg and, you know, and yeah, it's bad.
Well, remember that time we played a program with the Schumann first quartet, which is pretty involved, Hindemith third quartet, and the Smetana quartet, all like romantic blockbusters basically. We came off stage and said, oh, man, piece of cake next to Beethoven.
Yeah.
You know, you think the other way around, of course, but Beethoven always – the only guy who comes close is Bartok to the kind of energy and concentration level that it takes. So I don't know if it answers your question at all. You just kind of turn the page and because you've rehearsed it and conceived a certain way, you just sort of like – I don't know. It's like climbing a mountain. Well, it's just – we know what's there. Mm-hmm. You just take the steps that we know how to do and do our best to overcome it this time.
And sometimes the – you know, because it's such a challenge and because the music is so compelling and so all-consuming in a way, you know, sometimes you don't realize how tired you are until afterwards. Because in the midst of it, you're inspired, you're excited, you're
right, – adrenaline.
The adrenaline is pumping like crazy. And it's usually afterwards that you really feel exhausted.
Yeah, that's true. Well, one of my mentors, Sándor Vaig, who had a – great quartet in Europe for years, he said that playing Beethoven strengthens you.
Sort of like lifting weights.
Yeah. And I believe listening to Beethoven also strengthens you if you're really keeping up.
Well, let's exercise those muscles. I'm going to ask you gentlemen to go ahead and play the first movement of the Opus 59, number 1, the first Razumovsky quartet. We'll be right back. The Orion String Quartet performing music of Ludwig van Beethoven here on WFIU's Profiles. That was the first movement of the Opus 59, First Razumovsky. I'm Adam Ragusea. I'm glad to be with you here on Profiles, and I'm glad to be with the quartet in residence for the Indiana University Jacobs School of Music for the 2006-2007 season. It's the Orion String Quartet. Now, you gentlemen play a lot of Beethoven, but you have time and time again in your career demonstrated a commitment to new music, performing music by John Harbison, Chick Corea. You played Wynton Marsalis' first classical composition for strings. And now you're performing a new work by one of America's greatest and oldest composers, Leon Kirshner, his fourth string quartet. Now, his third string quartet he wrote in 1966, 1967, right? And that won him the Pulitzer Prize. And so now the fourth string quartet is for you guys. What's that like?
Yeah, that's – well, first of all, very glad to get him out of a 40-year retirement in writing string quartets.
We hounded him for years.
We hounded him.
Hounded him, yeah.
We finally got the opportunity to put a commission together for him. So he's – well, he wrote it when he was 86. He's now 86 – ages 86 to 87. Now he's 88. And still very much greatly alive and playing the piano incredibly and great thinker about music. But what Leon's music was always about was trying to get something deeply meaningful and beautiful. He studied with Arnold Schoenberg, who actually never taught the 12-tone, the famous scary 12-tone technique. He just figured that was something that just he did. He actually taught his students traditional harmony and told them all that a great work is still yet to be written in C major. So in a certain kind of spirit, Leon Kirshner took a little bit the character of what the New Vienna School was doing, but he never really embraced the 12-tone style. So his music has gorgeous but often very disturbed and intense harmonies. And throughout his career, especially in the third quartet, it's a little more avant-garde and that kind of thing. Now, lately, he's decided that he just likes his beautiful chords, and he's not going to have to pay lip service to serialists or especially in the 60s and 70s, if your music was caught with a lovely chord in it, it couldn't be taken seriously, unless it just happened to be a confluence of some serial technique or something. But now this fourth quartet is pretty much all just gorgeous harmonies, kind of at a demonically fast pace, but still nonetheless gorgeous, and some downright, you know, just you'd think it was a Mahler quartet or something here and there.
The third quartet has an electronic component. Does the fourth quartet?
No, the fourth quartet is just beautiful strings and It was conceived at the piano, so it's very harmony oriented. And whereas the first quartet, which you're going to hear, it reveals a little bit where he came from. You could hear some obvious references to Bartok quartets, which is why Joseph Szigeti said this was, you've written the Bartok Seventh. And you can hear things that are a little bit like the complexity of Schoenberg's music. But still, always there's some beautiful harmony in it all the time and beautiful melodic threads that go through it that are not abstract or brainy at all.
These things we've been recognizing in this fourth quartet, which is a very new piece, and then from a piece that was written over 50 years before, gee, you know, I hear the same some of the same chords and even some of his favorite intervals. They're still in there.
Same guy, yeah.
So he has his voice throughout this whole long life of his of writing, trying to write in different styles and whatnot. He really continues his own way all the way through.
When you gentlemen get the parts for a new work that you've commissioned and you sit down to rehearse it for the first time, is that moment any different from the first time that you sat down to rehearse the Dvorak American, which we're going to hear a bit of later on in the show?
No, not really. I think that's the beauty of it too, because the Dvorak American being different in that we grew up listening to recordings of it as young people, but these pieces are unheard of, and I think it was William Schumann who said that we should make the old masters sound like they were written today, and we should make today's pieces sound like they're 300 years old. So there's a beautiful thing of working on brand new contemporary music, in that it's unknown, it's unfamiliar, but then we should make it as if it's totally natural and organic like any other piece we've ever played. But I do remember sometimes working on pieces and that we've never worked on before and struggled through them just as we would the Third Kirchner Quartet. And working on the Third Kirchner Quartet now seems very familiar, and having performed it a few times seems like it's a part of the repertoire that's always been there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had sort of the advantage of having played several pieces of Leon Kirchner, and I personally, my first contact with him was 20-some years ago, playing his Sonata Concertante for violin and piano with him at the piano. So he pretty much taught me exactly how it's supposed to go, and then I could feel it from the way he played it.
That's one of the great advantages of having a living composer, is you can actually ask him. There are so many questions we'd love to ask Beethoven. You know, what were you really thinking when you wrote this down? Did you mean this, or, you know? And then it's so wonderful to be able to ask the composer. And sometimes you get a very non-specific answer,
right?
Which is a lot of fun,
right?
You know.
Well, sure. This composer is a pianist rather than a string player. Do you sometimes feel that you want to tell him how it's done?
Well, no, he always tells us how it's supposed to be done, pretty much.
Yeah, he's one of the kinds of composers that one encounters who has very specific ideas. I mean, I think it's partly – well, he's such an amazingly focused man, and he just zeroes in on things. It just seems his nature, and he finds – the specific meaning and the specific way things work, and he's used to doing that, as you said, as a performer. And so he's used to this part of the process of creating music himself. He's used to taking a piece of music, and he himself he's a fantastic musician and interpreter and of music of all ages, you know. And so, you know, it's very different than working with some composers who can also write fantastic music. You'll ask what they'd like, and we've had sessions with some composers where they're listening and they're hearing all kinds of possibilities they hadn't imagined yet for what they wrote, and they seem to encourage us to just go with our instincts and give a little nudge here or there, but Leon is very specific.
But I think he's also very specific in terms of what the characterization or the character of what he wants of a passage. And I know that, you know, Danny offered him some several possibilities about articulations on it. And he listened very carefully to each one of those, and he said, that one there. Yeah. And I don't think it was because that was exactly in his mind, but that went really to exactly the idea and the concept of what was inside in the character of what he was trying to speak. And I think all great composers have that similar quality that they're trying to say something, and if you say that, it's not about how fast you play it or slow you play it or the articulation per se, but if you get to the inner idea of what it's about, that's what they're going for. So that's why maybe a composer would be more specific or less specific and all accomplish the same thing.
You know, one thing we did learn from working with Leon Kirchner and many other composers is that their ability to notate what they want seems to stink. They can't do it right. That by their tempo markings, their metronome markings, the metric modulations, like especially with Leon's music, it's all out the window. Like there'll be an indication to get faster at a certain point. And then usually you interpret music. If you start getting faster before it's marked, someone raises hell. Well, Leon's music, well, he would tell us to get faster at a certain place and then slow down right where it says to get faster. So anyway, what we learned is that they all seem to stink at notation, so it actually gives us a little freer imagination when we interpret Beethoven's quartets, who has very specific metronome markings, which some of which are kind of kooky. So we kind of figure he was a reclusive, unpleasant, and increasingly deaf man. So maybe we could be more free to do what we want because he probably stank at notation too.
So you're listening to Profiles here on WFIU, and we are about to hear the Orion String Quartet perform the first movement of Leon Kirchner's First String Quartet. Listening to Profiles, I'm Adam Ragusea, and I'm privileged to be with the Orion String Quartet. And you just heard the first movement of Leon Kirshner's first string quartet. We're talking to cellist Timothy Eddy, violist Stephen Tenenbaum, and violinist brothers Daniel and Todd Phillips. Now, I have to ask this of the Phillips brothers. You two alternate the first and second chair in the quartets that you play. Do you literally alternate chairs in concert?
Oh, we usually do. I mean, the pieces we played today, I'm Danny. I played their first violin part just because that happened to be the number that came up. But normally we design our program so we're playing pretty much half and half. But we always learn a quartet one way. We don't switch. We don't say, want to play second today or for, we don't do that. But we divvy everything up right down the middle.
Depending on the programming, sometimes we have specific programming ideas that don't happen to jive with splitting, you know, the first and second chairs. So it really doesn't matter in the long run. The programming is more important at this point. So we sort of decided, all right, you know, in the Beethoven quartets, you know, we split those up, and you know, things that have you know, multiple pieces of the same composer, we tend to kind of divide, but sometimes not. Danny plays the first violin part in all the Kirshner quartets, just because that's just the way it worked out, you know. And so it really is becoming less and less of a big deal.
So speaking of programming, let's talk about when in the course of programming a concert you might choose to program a piece like you're going to play for us in just a couple of minutes here, a crowd pleaser like something from the Dvorak American.
Well, I just have to say that I've been working on the cello. You've been playing the viola a little bit, haven't you, Tim? Because we're going to start switching.
I didn't want to bring it up, Steve. Okay. I thought we were going to spring it on.
Okay.
But.
Well, this you might have heard it here first. We're just kidding. So when do we program something like the Dvorak American? We've been playing that piece a long time. We actually made a recording of it about 12 years ago, and I don't think it's commercially available anymore, but we're looking to maybe change that because it was coupled with a really nice performance of the piano quintet of Dvorak with Peter Serkin, one of our favorite collaborators. And that piece is so happy and joyful, especially the last movement that you're going to hear, depicting Dvorak's love for American music and all things American and his trip out to Iowa and on the train and the Indian rhythms and the Negro spirituals that he was listening to at the time. So we find that bringing that to audience is always a happy experience for us.
Yeah, so ending is good because Dvorak was like the king of great endings. There's so many of his pieces are the best pot boilers and, you know, crowd pleasers and applause getters and whatnot.
Yeah, so we use that particular movement as an encore sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
The last movement of the quartet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. All right, wonderful. So so let's hear it. This is the last movement of Antonin Dvorak's American Quartet here on WFIU's Profiles. This is the Orion String Quartet. The finale of Antonin Dvorak's American Quartet. We've been listening to the Orion String Quartet here in the WFIU studios for Profiles. I'm Adam Ragusa. I'm glad to be with you, and I'm glad very much to have had the Orion String Quartet in our studios today. Now, you gentlemen will be back for a fourth and final visit as part of your residency at the IU Jacobs School of Music.
Yeah, well, this is really, I don't know, it's a wonderful festive event, you know, to be playing with the students as colleagues on stage here. And it's part of what we enjoy about being here, is being involved in the life of the department in a number of ways, and to not just sit out in the audience and make criticisms, but here to play with some of the students, something we look forward to very much.
Well, cellist Timothy Eddy, violist Stephen Tenenbaum, and violinist brothers Daniel and Todd Phillips, thank you so much for joining us here in the studios today.
Great to be here.
Great to be here.
And for WFIU's Profiles, I'm Adam Ragusa. Thank you for joining us.
The program you just heard was recorded in February of 2007. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Emily McCord was our research assistant. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. More information about Profiles, including archives of past shows, can be found on our website at wfiu.org. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. Please join us again for the next edition of Profiles. For WFIU, thanks for listening.